Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hang in. Dude, there it is.
Smiley Kaufman for 61.
Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
What's up, y'all? This conversation is for all my football fans out there, especially my LSU Tigers. My guest was a 6'7", 330-pound people mover on the gridiron. He was named first-team SEC twice, won a national championship, made four Pro Bowls, won a Super Bowl, was named Walter Payton Man of the Year, and now he's retired and living the dream, playing a bunch of golf in LA. Let's get right to it. Here's my conversation with Andrew Whitworth.
All right, Big Whit, thanks for coming and joining the Smiley Show. And with the first time you and I met, it was actually at your home in North Louisiana. You hosted the LSU golf team, and it was a great evening. I had a great dinner, and I think it was about 4 or 5 years later, then you come stumbling onto the range at Riviera, and the PGA Tour media team had us kind of do a little deal where I helped you with your golf swing and hung out a little bit. But I'm curious, were you able to put two and two together that I was at that dinner at your house in North Louisiana? Were you like, okay, I met this guy before?
We sat there and talked for a minute, I did. I was like, you know what? I was curious because I thought to myself, all right, the timing should be about right that you came that night. And that was a lot of fun. That was a cool opportunity through Squire Creek that kind of reached out and wanted to know if I'd host some guys. And I was like, man, the LSU Tigers, of course. So that was really fun, having a dinner at the house with the fam and then having that opportunity with you at Riv. I think it was one of my first times ever go to Riviera. So that was a pretty special deal just to be there in itself.
Was that your first pro-am to ever play in? And it would have been at Riviera. So you're probably nervous that day.
I always tell people, you know, if you don't know, I mean, I'm a 6'7", 330-pound guy. That little tee box at the top at Riv on one is not very large in the tournament. I mean, there's, you know, they got all the setup of the sponsorship stuff. It's a little tiny area. I actually got to the point of worried less about hitting my shot and more about falling off the top of that little setup up there, because I was like, man, I'm so shaky and nervous and people are screaming, you know, they announce you on the box. And I had some jitters. I'm not going to lie. I had some jitters.
What was your handicap then? And what is it now?
It's probably somewhere in that 7 to 8 index range at that time. And now I'm probably somewhere in the 3 to 4 index range at this point.
Look at you. You retire from the NFL. Now that handicap is just soaring down.
That's right. Well, you know, and you know this way, you know, as anybody, I mean, in the game of golf, you guys competed at the highest level. You know, it's a roller coaster, right? So, you know, sometimes it goes down, sometimes it goes up. It's always interesting every morning to get out, take a couple swings and figure out who I'm going to be that day.
Oh, God, that is very relatable. And you actually said, you mentioned that you're a big guy. Everybody knows you're a big guy. When I see you in person, it's just like, God, I don't know many guys that are this big. I want to know how difficult it is being a big guy in this world. Like, would you rather sleep in a twin bed for a month or fly commercial across the country in a middle seat?
Oh, twin bed, no question. I'll sleep on the floor, Smiley, for not flying away in the middle seat. I actually, during our season this year, you know, I worked for Amazon, NFL on Prime for Thursday Night Football, and you know, you're bouncing around city to city doing that. And I had a trip. I wanted to go play in Larry Fitzgerald's foundation event in Nashville. So I had to take a Southwest flight and kind of jumped on it last second and didn't really have a lot of seat options. And I don't know if the experience was worse for me or the two people that had to sit in the three-person row. But it was fun. It was a good adventure. Luckily, it was a short flight.
Did you get the highly coveted exit row seat with the extra leg room?
I did not. It was somewhat of a formation of my head just resting on the side of the plane and my shoulder too. And
I had nowhere else to go. You're a window guy.
It was interesting. I think that was all that was left for me at that point.
I would have taken you for an aisle guy, 1,000%.
I definitely wish I had one. I'll tell you that much.
Well, you talked about the media stuff. We'll get into all the NFL stuff here in a little bit, but since you mentioned it, I kind of want to get into the media stuff. You and I both are in that world now. What has that experience been like for you getting started in that? Any surprises or any whoopsie moments you've had on air thus far?
You know, nothing too bad. I mean, obviously there's, the kind of the nerves, what I really enjoy and, you know, obviously in the golf world covering it, you guys are always at the venue, but you don't always get to do that. Then, you know, in the NFL, a lot of it's studio shows and those kind of things. So for us to get to go on site, be in the stadiums, I mean, honestly, it's almost easier for me because just the energy so good. Like I'm used to kind of being in that vibe and having that energy up inside of a stadium. So I've really enjoyed it. I mean, I can't really think of anything that I'd say, oh man, this is a bad moment, but a lot of just new things to learn. That's for sure. I mean, everything from what they're saying in my ear and having no idea what any of that lingo means.
Oh,
I think
gosh.
The first time they told me to cut, after the show, I asked our producer, like, did you not like what he was saying? What I was saying, and he's like, no, he's like, I'm just telling you that, like, we're running out of time, so you have to like cut. And I was like, oh man, in my mind I thought you meant like shut up, this isn't good, you know what I mean? And so that's just how I took it, right? He's like, hey, you gotta cut. Like, and so I think you learn some of that stuff and go through that experience. And I think it's a lot of fun though, man. I love covering the game and it's something that's changed my life, so getting a chance to talk about the way it's changing other guys has been a lot of fun for me.
How do you manage as a former player being critical of guys? Because, like, I know you probably didn't like to be criticized when you were playing. So how do you kind of manage that with guys you may have played against or with?
Yeah, I think as an analyst, I mean, it's your job to kind of, you know, somewhat talk about what's going on in the game, what you see coming up throughout the game, and then also dissect some of the play that you've been watching. And, you know, what are fans at home sitting there thinking? And can you kind of explain to them what's going on or maybe why something's happening? And so to me, I think when I'm sitting up there, I've always looked at it like people use the word critical or they use the word of like, can you be hard on guys? And I think of it like if I have a value in my mind and my heart of what I think the game of football should look like and what I think is going to lead to guys having more success. If I'm just conveying that in a way where I'm talking about a game I love and that I think this is the way you got to play it if you want to be good at it, I don't really see it as me being critical as much as me probably saying something that person themselves, when they watch the tape on Monday, are going to say, I need to do this better. And that's kind of how I look at it. I love these guys. I think these guys are doing something that's one of the hardest things in the world to do. I think it's insane. They're superheroes in my mind as well, not just little kids that look up to them playing this game. So I'm just looking at it from that perspective of what it's going to take to win and what it's going to take to be successful. And I don't really see it as being necessarily critical as much as maybe what it's going to take.
I'm sure when you came into the league, I'm sure you had mentors that helped you out as well. Who was that for you?
You know, I think there was a lot of guys. I mean, I look at my career early in my career, Carson Palmer was my quarterback. He was our, without a doubt, captain of our team and a guy who's a tremendous leader. You know, TJ Husmanzada, Levi Jones, Willie Anderson. I go the list as long and when I got to Cincinnati. And obviously Marvin Lewis was somebody that was like a father figure, great man. And so I think there's a lot of guys there early in my career that poured a lot into me. And then even at LSU, I mean, I had some great ones. You know, I played under Nick Saban there, who's a tremendous leader and a lot of great coaches now that are head coaches all over the place. So I haven't been short on that. I've had a lot of people to look up to and a lot of things that I always say to guys. It's like, don't idolize one guy or try to be like one person that's had influence on you, but find what it is that makes those people special and take a little piece of that and see if you can make it part of who you are and if it fits into what you're aspiring to be. And so I think I've had some great ones to just pull a couple little pieces from throughout my career and say, I want to aspire to be the leader that a guy like Carson Palmer is, or be diligent about my work, like a Willie Anderson, one of the greatest right tackles of all time, and TJ Husmanzada, just how much he broke down himself every play, every technique. There's just a lot of things that I learned throughout my career from different guys.
When I was at your house up in North Louisiana, I remember you talking about how much time you put into learning people's techniques that you went up against. You use a way to describe it, like it was like a defense thing. There was like a word that you use. Is that ringing any bells of like you studied a certain thing, like to learn their patterns?
Yeah, I loved habitual patterns. And so
habitual patterns. That was the buzzword.
That's the habits. So, you know, I think at the end of the day, like we all move a certain way we move. I mean, golf is one of the greatest examples, right? I mean, you can go a million different, you know, clinics and all these things. But the truth is, you look at the best golfers in the world. Sure, there's certain parts of the swing that are similar at impact in different places. But the rest of it, man, it's unique to who they are and how they swing it. And so I look at football the same way. And not just as when I teach linemen or I'm learning myself, but when I'm facing people and when I would face defensive ends or different rushers, I would look for how their body moves and try to study that pattern and understand a little bit of like, you know, why their hand goes up when they spin or why their hips shift a certain way when they're going to try and put some kind of in and out crossover type move, or how straight line their body gets when they're going to bull rush. And I would try to put it in my mind and create it as muscle memory to where the second I saw it in a rush, I knew it was coming before it actually hit me. And a lot of times I would tell people that sometimes I would almost see rushes coming before they ever even got out of their stance, and for good and bad. I mean, it was like, I would think that that's what's coming. And I'm like, crap, why didn't I trust it? And then over my career, I learned more and more to trust some of those feelings and some of those intuition. And, but for me, yeah, those habitual patterns, man, learning how guys move, I thought was one of the best things I could do. Not studying whether they're successful, but studying how they're successful and what it is that actually gets guys in a rush was always something that was so interesting to me.
It was fascinating to you listen to you talk about that way back in the day. And it's more interesting even now. But when you were coming up in the league, I imagine everybody has their welcome to the NFL moment. What was yours?
Oh man. And playing left tackle in the NFL, I think you have a lot of, you know, coming to Jesus moments, as I say, but, you know, I think there's plenty of them I could list, but I think one of them for me is definitely, you know, in the RCA Dome, the old RCA Dome in Indianapolis on the old school turf, playing Dwight Freeney on Monday Night Football my rookie year. I mean, he absolutely annihilated me. I was not ready for that matchup by any means, but it was one of those things where you just knew it was going to be an interesting night, because we got into pregame, our, you know, right tackle Willie Anderson, who hopefully is going to get in the Hall of Fame here soon, a tremendous player, got an injury in pregame, so we had to move a guy over to right tackle. So the plan going into the game was like, protect their young rookie, myself. And then it became, oh crap, now both our tackles have no experience. So it was going to be kind of, we had to like choose what plays depending on what we're doing, who's getting the help. So going into that game, I was a little concerned, and I'm like, man, all right, I don't know if I'm ready to block this guy, but I'm going to give it my best. And then sure enough, Peyton Manning's on the other side. And I think they jumped up 21-0 on us. And needless to say, it got real ugly real fast when it turned into a passing game. You know, I try to forget that game, but I've seen it a couple times on film, and it's just as cringeworthy as it is now.
He had you on skates, huh?
Oh man, it was like chasing a little kid. He hit a couple spins. I'm not sure, you know, if I figured out where he was yet. I mean, it was like he disappeared on me a couple times.
Man, I can't even imagine trying to block that man. But you, as you continued on into your career, you were able to figure it out, and you became an unreal player. But I'm a big believer in hard work. In golf, we kind of have to perfect everything that we do, and we put a ton of time into what we do. And I always feel like what you get out of it is what you put into it. And I've heard a story, and right now you're in Colorado. So I'm curious on this story I've heard about you. Well, you used to basically run up the mountains in very difficult conditions in Colorado to breathe, and you're scaling a mountain trying to train for the year. Is that something that you did every single year?
That's true. I'm actually here. I was just telling you earlier, I'm at Frost Creek Country Club here in Eagle, Colorado. And I started probably in, I would say 2013, 2012, somewhere in there. I started coming up here with some close friends and ended up joining this club, and then just fell in love with Colorado and being here in the altitude. I spent like 2 weeks before training camp that year and worked out here. And when I went to camp, I was like, man, I feel amazing. So I brought my wife and the kids out here the next winter, and we loved it. And we were like, you know what, let's do it. And so we bought a house, and I spent probably the last 10 years of my career. As soon as we'd end OTAs in June, like early June, I would spend 6 weeks here. backpacking, like loading up backpacks with weights and carrying dumbbells, doing a lot of weighted carries and stuff like that, and hiking a lot with the family and going on some of my own morning hikes, carrying weights. And I loved it, man. I would go to training camp and feel so freaking good that I got obsessed with it. So I literally would come here, you know, play 42 holes of golf every day, hike the mountains and just stay up on my feet moving, man. Not watching TV, not sitting down, keeping my big butt moving. You know what? I think it's one of those things I credit with, honestly, the longevity of my career, because it really, to me, got me moving and got me feeling really good. And it was a different way of training, not sitting in a weight room all the time, finding different ways to get out and move the body.
Yeah, it changes your mindset almost. And I know you trained kind of towards the later part of your career, doing a lot of golf mobility exercises to try to lengthen your career. When did you kind of start getting into that form of exercise?
Yeah, I think, you know, early in my NFL career, I started picked up golf, honestly, just to have something to do in the off seasons. You know, I lived in Louisiana in the off seasons. I just wanted to get out and sweat and swing the golf club.
You could sweat there in the off season, that's for sure.
Walk into the mailbox, you can sweat there. So I loved getting out and just moving. And I found it as like a good way for me to like train in the mornings and work out and then go to the range and just hit balls all day. And I'd listen to music and just kind of vibe out on the range. It was like my favorite thing to do. And like, people would always be like, dude, do you ever play golf with people? Like, you just sit out here on the range with music and hang out. And I loved it. Like, I was obsessed with it. So everywhere I went, that's what I did. I mean, Cincinnati, and then when I moved to LA, I think when I moved to LA, I really got into a little more of getting some of the mobility work and learning some of that, you know, the truly kind of getting in good, better golf positions. And I think for me, I've always credited golf with something that changed me athletically, because when I came into the NFL, even talking about that Dwight Freeney game, I was somebody who was extremely strong, really big, but I was stiff as can be and could not move very well. And I didn't have good lateral agility and stuff, but I just had athleticism naturally and powerful and could move people. But throughout my career, for people that understand, you know, the biomechanics of it, I played left tackle. So you're always on the right side of your body. So your right knee, right ankle, right elbow, right wrist, right shoulder, where all your injuries are. If you look at any offensive lineman, whatever side they play, their inside part of their body is where all their injuries are. And so I played 16 years of left tackle, stress on the right side of my body. Well, everybody knows in the game of golf, I played golf right-handed. You got to move to your left side. So I spent my entire offseason, you know, moving pressure to my left side, learning how to rotate the other direction. So I always said that it kind of like unwound everything that I did in football and would actually move all my weight and everything I did to the other side and made me feel much better mobility wise, just body wise. I started feeling a lot better, being able to use my left side a lot more. And if you actually watch a lot of plays at the end of my career, even if you go to the Dallas Cowboys playoff game in 18, I guess, when that run, and we're running the inside zone a lot, like I'm literally using what you would call golf mechanics. Like I would put 2 feet in the ground and just literally throw defensive ends out into the outer space so the ball could go underneath me, and it literally looks like a big driver swing, like you're doing a long drive competition. And that's literally where I learned how to do that movement. It's just learning how to rotate power. I learned it from that.
Well, for all the people that are listening and they're wondering how they can use the ground better in their golf swing, all you got to do is play left tackle in the NFL. That's one way to learn how to use the ground, baby.
That's it.
You know what? This took a little bit of research. I figured out that you did catch a touchdown in one of your 11 years that you played in Cincinnati. I want to know what the play call was, and did y'all practice it ahead of time, and how nervous were you knowing you're about to, like, this is your moment?
Well, you know, there's a couple good parts of that. You know, we go down, it's in Pittsburgh. It's on my birthday, actually, 12-12. And that game week, OC came to me and was like, hey, we're going to get you a touchdown on your birthday. I'm like, all right, yeah, right. Present.
Love it.
Oh yeah. So like, I'm like, yeah, right. That's not going to happen. You're not going to call it when we get down there. So opening drive of the game, we go down against Pittsburgh, get down to the 2-yard line, 3-yard line, somewhere in there. And they call it 42 ISO Y leak. And so I go out, get on Lamar Woodley, kind of throw him off the side. I almost lose my footing. If anybody's ever played in Pittsburgh, they know it's like the sandy, it's the worst turf. The grass is horrible that late in the year. And so literally I almost fall down, turning around to look for the ball, which would have been horrible. And Carson just lobs me up a softball. It was great. Catch it, spike it, great moment. The best part is, because I really didn't think it would happen, I never told my wife, and she was pregnant with our 2 twins. And I think she peed on the floor and about passed out because she had no idea like what is going. She's sitting at home getting ready for my birthday for me to get home that night. And she's like, holy crap. It, you know, Witt just freaking scored a touchdown. So I literally got an earful from her when I got on the phone after like, you, I know you knew that play was in and you didn't tell me. But it was great. The other part of that, Smiley, and I don't know, I've asked some guys to look this up. We got to get in the NFL research team. I want to know I want to know if that's the only game an offensive lineman has scored the only offensive touchdown. There was no offensive touchdowns in that game except for my touchdown. We threw two pick sixes, I think, and then kicked a field goal, something like that. I think it was like 14-10 somewhere in there.
Up as 14-10. What an odd way for it to end up.
Yeah. So no offensive touchdowns in the game other than the big guy. So I got to find out. It's an NFL history. How many times that happens?
Wow, that is incredible. I would be upset too if you didn't tell me that you're going to be catching a touchdown that day if I was your wife. Man, these are a couple quick hitter questions about the NFL that I'm curious. Kind of when you look back on your career, and maybe you kind of know the answer to this one. We may have just talked about it. Who's the best player you ever went up against?
Yeah, I think early in my career, Dwight was definitely up there. I mean, John Abraham was a really special rusher. You know, he had some injury stuff and bounced around a little bit there at the end when I was kind of early in my career, but he was really special. You know, DeMarcus Ware, obviously, is a guy who's a close friend and an unbelievable player. I think I kind of put guys in eras. And so in that era, you know, it was kind of those guys. Julius Peppers, obviously, you know, rare, rare guy. And then I think you move to like the next era of guys is somewhere in that Von Miller, you know, Khalil Mack, you know, some of those type guys that you really were pretty rare dudes. I mean, Alden Smith was, you know, unfortunately had, you know, his career got sidetracked, but he was a really special guy as a young player as well. And, you know, I think that then I moved into, you know, now, I mean, guys like Bond's still really good. Khalil's had some up and down years, but Nick Bosa and Joey Bosa and, you know, Myles Garrett, you know, you got some really special ones in the league now that, you know, are really getting it done. And so I think for me, I still love kind of the old school era only because in that era, the pass plays were so limited and teams were so like, they didn't want to expose their linemen to much. So, you know, you might have play action a lot or you'd run the ball a lot and very few ops to truly get third down pass plays to get after it. So their win percentage had to be so much higher. I feel like these guys nowadays are really good and they're really athletic and really special, but they get a lot more opportunities probably than guys did maybe, you know, 10, 12, 15 years ago.
Which city did you hate to play in?
Oh man. I mean, Cleveland was kind of, you know, here's the thing. I mean, Cleveland, you know, there's just not much there. I mean, that's just the thing. And so you're not real excited about the flight up to Cleveland. You know, I played in Cincinnati. We weren't staying anywhere nice anyway. So, you know, we were hanging out at the Radisson or something, you know, so it was always kind of a blah trip. Let's just put it that way. But now Pittsburgh was awesome. I love in our division. Pittsburgh and Baltimore were so fun to me. Baltimore had the band. And, you know, that was the Ray Lewis years. That was a blast. And then obviously Pittsburgh was so special on defense. And I still think of Sticks and just all the good music Pittsburgh plays. And, man, just some cool moments being on that field in the fourth quarter. You know, those freaking yellow towels everywhere. A lot of big games, big moments throughout my career right there in that stadium.
Who was the best player you ever played with?
Oh man, played with. I mean, I you know, I'd have to say Aaron Donald. I think Aaron Donald.
I was guessing that was going to be the answer.
Yeah, I don't know how you could ever put anybody above that dude. He's one of the most special guys I've ever been around. From just his work ethic, you know, everything you want out of somebody, he fits the top of the mold. And he's a rare, rare, rare guy. I mean, I don't think people can really value how hard it is to be as successful as he is as a three tech. Constantly getting doubled and tripled and being the center of attention for every single team, yet he continues to win and dominate. It's pretty rare.
Well, you ended up at the Rams for your last five seasons winning a Super Bowl, but the quarterback that you had, Matthew Stafford, would he have ever been the quarterback at the Rams if it weren't for your all's trip down to Cabo?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know. It's one of those things that it's just crazy how things work out. I mean, you know, the Rams and Sean and you know, and Jared Goff were kind of at separate ends and didn't really know how that relationship would go forward. And then randomly, you know, they get a chance to spend some time, and Matthew's been given, you know, the grace by the Lions to look for a new place. And I think it ended up now, you really look back at it, it's a wild moment, but I think it's worked out really good for everybody. I mean, you look at Jared Goff and the Lions and what a finish they had last year and how he's been playing, man. I mean, what a tremendous young man. And just Jared's one of those guys I will be a massive fan of forever because of just the human being and the character he has, man. He's a special dude. And then for Stafford, I mean, he's a legend and always been one of those guys, man, that loves to shoot his shot and have a lot of fun. And so he's a really cool dude. I mean, we're in that similar stage in life with four kids and all of them bunched up, so we get to spend a lot of dad time together, as I call it, just getting out on the golf course and having a little checkout time. But you know, it's really special. I don't know if we win a Super Bowl. I don't know, you know, really how my career ends, you know, if that doesn't happen, just because, you know, that injection of Matthew Stafford made a huge difference for our team. And it's not that Jared wouldn't have got it done. I think Jared just probably was a few years behind because you look at the age of these quarterbacks. It's just the truth. You have these rare guys that exist right now in Mahomes, some of these guys, and they have some success, but that's just not the norm. In your first 3 to 6 years in the league, it's a struggle, man, and you're trying to grind it out every year as a quarterback. That's the hardest position in the planet, man. So I'm happy for where things have ended up for Jared, and also obviously for Stafford and us as the Rams being Super Bowl champs is something I'll never forget.
The Lions are kind of like the people's teams now. Like, who would have ever thought that the Lions?
Everybody I run into, it's like, man, I'm really looking for the Lions this year. It almost is making me nervous because I want them to be really good, but I don't like it when everybody's already on the bandwagon because it's the NFL. It never works out how you think it's going to.
They're fun to watch. The team that's easy to root for. I love the culture when you watch the that HBO doc of that whole team. It's hard to not root for that that organization. And so was it basic? Did it feel like destiny in the Super Bowl to end up playing against the Bengals, the team that you played 11 years for, and eventually getting the win? Did it just kind of feel like this is the way it has to end for me?
Yeah. You know, when you enter that situation, I always say people think of the game, and I really thought of it actually 2 weeks before in the NFC and AFC championship, when they won, they made the kick to win. And we're going out for pregame warmups against the Niners, who we haven't beaten in like 7 tries. I think they've beaten us like 6 or 7 times in a row. And I remember watching the kick go through. And as I ran out, I was late, kind of like a little bit late getting into pregame warmups. I'm running out there on the field. And I was just like, we're winning the game. And I was like, in my mind, I just knew it. Like, I don't care what happens in this game, we're winning because it's destiny for me to go play the, like, how would the Bengals go to the Super Bowl and me not go there to play them? Like, I just, that would be, there's no way that's not happening. So there's definitely some moments in the Niners games, I'm like, what the heck's going on? Why are we behind? But at the end of it, to win it and have that chance to go play them, you know, I tell people this, those 2 weeks were emotional, man. To spend 11 years and invest what we did in that community. And then the first time you really get a chance to go against them in a big competition like that, is in the Super Bowl, where you're so proud of them for being there. Cause you know, you had a hand in some of the people that were there, and Zach Taylor obviously was with us in LA. I was a part of when he got hired, just kind of helping him with taking over that job and what he needed to look forward to and think about. And so you kind of felt invested in both places. And to play in that game, it was very surreal because it was like, man, I had said 4 weeks ago before the playoffs started, this was it. No matter how it goes, we lose the first game, whatever happens, to be sitting there in the Super Bowl, knowing you had chosen this is the way to go out, man, I just felt like it was an ultimate compliment from God or the NFL gods or whatever you want to say that, you know what, we're going to let you go out this way, man. Like, you know, and so it was really special.
What is it like now seeing Cincinnati as a regular Super Bowl contender, considering from when you came into the league till now? We got our boy Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, LSU Tigers in there that seem to be one of the best pairing in the NFL. It's got to be pretty cool for you to see the Bengals being considered one of the top teams in the NFL year in, year out now.
It's really special. I mean, and again, for you know, Joe and how special he is, and Ja'Marr as well. I got a chance to be around Ja'Marr this offseason a little bit. And you know what? It's so cool because for 11 years, it's like, you know, you made a lot of playoff appearances. We won three division championships. We never found a way to win that playoff game. And it was something that you felt like just haunted over the team, even as good as we were. And I don't think people really realize in that small market how many games we really, you know, were able to win in that window. And it was a lot. We just didn't find a way to win in the postseason. And it labels you. It you know, it's much like being a golfer and never finding a way to win a tournament or win the major, you know. And it's like, man, you played a lot of great golf. You won a lot of money on tour, but you never won the thing. So people just are like, try to make it like it's a negative, right? And we felt great about our time there. We just never found a way to win a playoff game. And so now to see Joe and those guys have the success they're having, man, I couldn't be more happy for them. My kids are rocking the unis every week. They're watching the games. You know, they have a blast. That's some of their, you know, big fans of. I think this year with Amazon, we actually have the Ravens-Bengals game in Baltimore. So the boys are already politicking me for missing school that week. We'll see what happens, though.
I love it. And for a while, you were kind of back and forth. I remember just watching the bottom line ticker on SportsCenter where you were kind of debating coming back or playing. And when did you know when to hang it up?
You know, I knew I'd said when the playoffs happened that I would retire. And then you win the Super Bowl, and I kind of told my kids that was it. And then you get a month away and you're like, all right, I still feel pretty good. I just won a Super Bowl. But you know, I really credit Sean McVay, who's one of my closest friends in life now. And you know, he kind of helped me put in perspective. And he's just like, man, even I, as your head coach, like, I think you've accomplished everything you can accomplish. And I would just feel bad trying to bring you back here and you having some kind of significant injury at 41 years old, that's a lot harder to come back from, you know, at that age. And so he helped me put it in perspective a little bit, and I honored the commitment that I had. You know, January 1st, I told my wife that we were going to retire after these playoffs, and we did it. And so obviously there was a lot of chatter last season, you know, of me coming back and making a return and having to tell people no and all of that. My wife getting nervous again that I might do it. But, you know, I think the reality is I think it'll be a lot less of that now. And that was fun. It was entertaining. It was nice to be wanted and teams and fans to want you. But at the end of the day, I feel like I've accomplished what I'm going to accomplish on the football field. Now it's just looking forward to talking about the game.
Yeah, I imagine what you probably miss the most is competing in that competition that drives so many athletes. But from comparing the football field versus the golf course, two different arenas. One, you know, we typically have a very quiet, everything's maybe loud in your head, but the football field is super loud and, you know, you're having to really focus and you're working on, you know, silent counts, this and that. So I'm curious, a 3rd and 8 Seattle, when you're trying to go down and win the game and you have to get a first down versus when you're on the golf course and you've got 240 yards, a shot into a par 5 and you know, you can't hit it in the water on 18. What is the difference for you as far as like your ability to kind of quiet your mind in a loud arena versus kind of a soft arena like the golf course can be?
Well, I think, you know, for me, it's funny you say that. I always laugh when I play golf with guys and somebody makes them, you know, moves or makes a noise. I'm always like, listen, I'm used to 80,000 people telling me about my mom and my kids and my wife and where they can go in some choice words. You're not gonna bother me, okay? Just go ahead and move around a little bit. But on the golf course, you know, here's the thing. I think that obviously being my size, swinging the golf club is not really maybe what I was meant to do biomechanically. So it's a lot more stress when I step over a shot of where it's going, no doubt about it. But the one thing I always said in my career that I loved is like, you look at the game of golf, especially for an offensive lineman, and I think that's why there's a lot of O-linemen that play. You know, when we go out and play, it's like, hey, in my mind, I always try to say, look, par 72. And the ultimate goal in golf is how many good swings, how many good swing thoughts, times you step over the ball, you can hit it the way you want to hit it, and, you know, minimize the mistakes and have as good as whatever it is, a club, a putter, whatever, the swings you're proud of, you feel good about. Well, when I played in a football game, you're playing 70, 80 plays. And it was, as an offensive lineman, how technically efficient, how well can I do my job for those 70, 80 plays? And,
well,
and
like staying golf
in the mind frame. Yeah. And so there's moments in football where, like, I know Willie Anderson used to always teach us in the run game, you can be super aggressive and violent, and you can tee off and you can pick your times. But in the pass game, it's about balance and poise and staying calm in the moment. And so when it's third and eight in Seattle and there's noise everywhere and you're on the silent count and you're trying to look at the guy you're blocking and the football to your right, you got to get off in an efficient manner with no hesitation, no jerkiness, just smooth and under control, and then have balance and an idea of how to block the guy in the moment. And have no idea where the ball is or how long it's going to take to get out. And so that takes a lot of poise and composure. And so I always related that, man, really golf helped me learn a lot of that, how to just maintain my poise and composure and hit shots that I wanted to hit. So it's a lot of similar experiences, not necessarily the action that you're doing, but the experience of the mindset and really learning to control your emotions. You know, if it's a 240-yard shot on a par five, maybe I can be a little amped up and take a little more club and get after it, right? And hope that that results to me having no hesitation hitting a better shot. But then when it's that four footer, you know, downhill that's got a little slide in it, you know, you're gonna need some poise. Like, you're gonna need to be able to calm down and just hit the shot you want to hit. So there's a lot of those things that I think are very similar.
You mentioned 70 to 80 plays, and I said that's very similar to golf. Actually, I'm going to take that back. I would rather it be 60 or 70 plays as it relates to golf versus 70 or 80.
Yes, you would. Yes, you would. In my world, it's 70 to 80.
No, I hear you. I'm actually curious as well, as being a left tackle, I didn't know. So you're watching the ball and watching the defensive end. So I didn't know that you're just watching the ball to wait till that moves. But you also have to keep it. So you're basically got eyes going this way.
Yeah, a lot of guys learn how to periph a little bit. Some guys just look at the football and then turn their head as they kick. And so when you're on the road with the noise and everything else, man, as a tackle, it's a challenge. Some of those guys are really good at timing the snap and getting off. And so a lot of the times it's not really just your ability to block them. Sometimes they just flat out torch you off the snap. And so you have to lose all technique and find ways to survive. And then other times, you know, there's just guys who struggle a little bit in silent atmospheres. And so I think that's a little tougher. Now, when you play at home, obviously, when you got the quarterback's voice inflection and everything else, you can jump it a little bit and it's an advantage. But if you go look actually, you know, at really good high-end tackles and great edge rushers, there's a big discrepancy home and away where their success is at. And so, you know, I know a lot of edge rushers that are really good and on the all-time list that, you know, the majority of almost all their sacks come when they're at home and they're playing with their crowd noise because they're able to really use it to their advantage.
Man, that's interesting. This is a question I'm going to start asking any person that I have on the show that's not a golfer per se, but this is what they do for fun. And as it relates back to their sport, what is the best shot you've hit in a tournament setting on the golf course versus the best play or let's say block for you you've ever made, and which one felt better?
Oh man, look, there's nothing better than hitting a great shot in golf. I mean, you know, you get a par five that it's a little reachable, but not, and you hit that shot. To me, that's one of the greatest feelings on the planet. I've had a couple just like in member members, stuff like that, where you've hit a shot in a critical moment that's led to you being successful in the tournament. Those probably stick in my mind more than any football play. That's just the reality. I mean, the touchdown, I can't even remember. People bring it up all the time, like you scored a touchdown. I'm like, honestly, I don't remember much about it. But you asked me the member guest in 2015 at Frost Creek. When I hit, you know, a shot into a par five and they made a birdie to force a playoff and then we go on to win, you know, like that to me is, you know what, that's the stuff that I remember. So golf is definitely the thing that gets me jacked up the most to do well at it.
Man, it sounds like you, and I was going to ask you this, is I wanted to see how much you really love golf. If I told you in your 16-year NFL career that you would have the same 16-year PGA Tour career and you made the same amount of money in both, which one are you picking?
Oh, golf. No question. Sorry.
Oh, I love it. This guy is
no question.
He's one of us.
No. Oh yeah. I'm obsessed. Look, I can play 42 a day. I love it. I love the game.
And I saw you at Melman's party in Los Angeles last weekend, and you were kind of keeping me up to date on your season long match play tournament at Sherwood. Yeah. Is that correct? Yeah. And yeah. You've advanced a couple times, beating a guy who's a sandbagger, which according to everyone, they were excited that you got that win. Where are you in this bracket? Are we still alive?
we're still alive right now. You know, those are my favorite thing. I mean, anytime you get a chance to go beat the Sandbaggers in these tournaments, that, you know, the handicap may not be that accurate. And then, I'm also playing in the gross one. So it's guys that are way better than me for sure. So I like that because I like getting back from the tips of the golf course and playing against guys who are better than you. It's the only way I've ever gotten much better at the game is when I'm playing guys who I'm kind of looking up to how good of a golfer they are. I just feel like it has a dramatic impact on my game and chasing them a little bit. I have a tendency just being, somebody who didn't really grow up in the game of golf and necessarily learning the pace and really how it's done as a kid, that I have a tendency to just get out there and start. I mean, I could play, in an hour. I mean, I fly through a golf course. And so for me, getting in that setting with somebody like that who's taking it that serious, it slows me down and it almost like I love it. I must take it in more and enjoy the competition a little bit more. So we're still alive. We got work to do, though. We got two more rounds to get to the finals. So we'll see what happens.
What are the strengths and weaknesses of your game? I would assume that being a big guy would have to be stuff around the green with touch stuff or just.
Yeah. Short game stuff. For me, it's like, I didn't play during the season. So I would get really good, be at my best in, late July. And then it's like, put the clubs up and don't play again until March or April when you're feeling good again and your hands don't, you can actually close your fingers and, whatever you've done to your hand or shoulder or arm is healed. So it was like you took this long break. So for me, it's like I can usually get out, hit irons pretty well, like long irons I hit well and driver and three wood and all that. Obviously, I can hit it a long way, but really the short game stuff, learning the game from 100 yards and in and all the different ways, right? Whether you're in the rough or different things and different little shots, not always hitting the same shot that you that's the only weapon you have. And so for me now, really being retired, that's really the stuff that I'm trying to focus on the most is, learning how to be good from 100 yards and in, not necessarily just in the fairway, but just anywhere, just learning all those different aspects of the game.
What is your ball speed when you connect on one? I know you know what it is.
You know what? I'm not a big, here's the thing. I'm not, what's wild, as much as I love the range, I've not spent much time on TrackMans and stuff. I don't know why, any of that stuff. Well, I just haven't really been into it. I like to just hit balls and try and I'm a shot shaper. I like to feel like I can hit all the different shots. Like I almost love a course like Riv because I love to have all right, you got to squeeze one, you hit a bad drive. All right, now you got to hit this draw or this hook kind of through some trees or find a way to kind of shape the ball a little bit. I love that kind of stuff. I mean, that's my favorite part of golf is finding all those little shots that you have them in your bag. And so probably I do too much of that. That might be the problem. Just learning to hit straight golf balls would be probably a better idea. But I have too much fun learning all the different shots. So, we'll see. We'll see how it pans out. But I can hit it a long way, that's for sure.
I'm going to go with 190 ball speed then. We'll just go with 190 ball speed and call it a day. I feel like when you connect, it's going to continue to fly in the air, especially in Colorado. But the ball goes way far
there. Fun here. You feel real strong in Colorado, that's for sure.
All right. Well, last question, man. I think probably one of the things I would imagine that you're most proud of in your career, maybe even more so than winning a Super Bowl and getting a ring, is winning the Walter Payton Man of the Year. I just think your speech, if you haven't seen it, go watch it on YouTube. It's about 11 minutes long, but so many relatable things and just how much work you put into the community. And I know how important that is to you to give back. Would you say you're more proud of winning that award than even winning a Super Bowl ring?
I think what I'm more proud of is being associated with somebody who cares, about other people more than just themselves all the time. And I think to me, that's what Walter Payton, that award's really about and what Walter Payton stood for. And really, hopefully what people get from it is it's really not about what they've accomplished or what they've given or the monetary amount. It's about the investment and just caring and being somebody who walks through a room and actually genuinely gives a crap about how people's day is going and how they could help them. To me, that's something that's really important to me. It's something that my wife and I, Melissa and I, really pour into our kids, that we're going to be more proud of how they treat people and the respect they give people and the love they show people than any grade or any athletic achievement. We want them to know that that's the number one thing to us. And the thing that'll make us the most proud of them is really what people would say of how they speak to them and how they speak about them and how they carry themselves. And so to me, that's what that award embodies. And it's what I'm the most proud of is that hopefully people see that in myself. And I think really it's what gets me going, man. I genuinely just love to see people do well and love to see people thriving in life. If it's throughout the different sports, guys I've gotten to meet, or just going to a school and meeting a young kid who has a dream. There's nothing more fun to me than seeing an opportunity where somebody gets a chance to chase their dream or be who it is they want to be. And so that award to me signified a lot of time and investment wife and I had in different communities we got a chance to play in and grow up in.
Well, Whit, I know a lot of people look up to you, and definitely you're one that I've always looked up to, especially being just the type of man you are, and then also being an LSU guy. I think you set the standard extremely high, and this has been a really fun conversation. I really think the golf connection with the NFL and getting into some LSU stuff back in the day, this has been really fun. And hey, keep hitting them straight. And why don't you go win that Sherwood season-long match play for us, huh?
Yeah, I'll send you a picture. We'll update. If there's a trophy, we'll update everybody with the trophy pick, man. Come on, we got to.
Man, we'll have to keep chasing. We'll keep eating them straight, my man, and go Tigers, all right?
Yeah, go Tigers. Appreciate it, brother.
Always great having a Bayou Bengal on the show. That's two now, including my guy, Sam Burns. So y'all go check that episode out now if you're an LSU fan. I am boots on the ground this week at the Travelers Championship. So come back here on Monday for a recap of all the action in Connecticut. Thanks for listening, and see you then.
The Smiley Show is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcast.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.